We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we record and pay our respects to their elders past and present. We recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and culture.
The New Script is a podcast created for educational and awareness-raising purposes only. The conversations you'll hear are not intended as medical advice. Please speak with a qualified healthcare professional for any personal medical concerns or decisions.
Noticing that the technology we currently use for fetal monitoring has been the same since the 1960s and 70s. It hasn't really adapted or changed. And our outcomes, regarding stillbirth, haven't changed in over 20 years. And perhaps that might be a result of the technology that we have is quite archaic in obstetrics.
So we have a wearable patch that goes on the mum's tummy. That patch has a few sensors that are spread about to pick up the electrical signals that come both from the baby's heart, the mum's heart, and the uterus. In a way, it's more convenient for clinicians and their families. And so really, it's a win-win on all fronts.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the New Script. If you caught the last episode, you'll remember that we talked about sperm's role in creating a healthy pregnancy.
This time, we're looking at the other side, technology that's giving us better insights to support clinical decision-making during pregnancy. And I love medical devices that use data to empower clinicians and ultimately improve care. So this was really exciting.
So good and so true. As a mum and someone who's been through the journey myself, I know firsthand how challenging it can be to monitor your baby's development and navigate through tough decisions when complications arise.
Yeah, and so it's really interesting to talk to Fiona and Emerson from Carly Healthcare today as they're showing how technology is reshaping the experience for birthing women and care providers. We've really enjoyed this conversation and we hope you do too.
You're listening to a Day1.fm show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The New Script. Today, we are thrilled to welcome Associate Professor Fiona Branfoot and Emerson Keenan, who are the co-founders of Carly Health. Fiona is a clinician scientist and obstetrician at the Mercy Hospital for Women and the Epworth Freemasons and a laboratory trained scientist at the University of Melbourne. Emerson is an electrical engineer with a PhD on wearable technology for pregnancy monitoring. Emerson is also a research fellow at the University of Melbourne. We are so happy and pleased and honoured to have you both here with us today. And to kick us off, we'd love if you could tell us a bit about yourselves and Carly Healthcare.
Yeah, thanks so much, friends. Really lovely to be on the podcast. As I said, my name is Dr. Emerson Keenan. I'm the CEO and CTO of Carly Healthcare and also have an honorary research fellow appointment in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at the University of Melbourne. Together with Fiona, we're really passionate about the development of new wearable technologies and artificial intelligence methods that could help improve our capabilities to improve pregnancy outcomes.
Thanks so much, Fran and Mackenzie, for having us. My name's Associate Professor Fiona Branfoot. I'm an obstetrician at Cremission, who I work at both the Mercy Hospital for Women as well as Epworth Freemasons. And I've also got a research role at the University of Melbourne. And it really is our passion to try and improve pregnancy monitoring to improve outcomes for our patients.
Fantastic. We're really excited to speak to you both today and learn a bit more about this space, but also learn a bit about Carly Healthcare. So let's take it back to the beginning. Where did you start? What led you to start Carly Healthcare? Was there a moment that sparked the idea or did it come from research?
Yeah. So interestingly, both Fiona and I came at it from different points. So my story was that I did my undergraduate degree in electrical engineering and I did a honors thesis looking at technologies for respiratory monitoring. And so as part of that, I started to get a taste for biomedical research and I found it really exciting. So from then I spent a few years working in industry and I always thought I really, really want to find a project that I can, use these skills and try and improve health outcomes. And I found there was a group at University of Melbourne looking at new technologies for pregnancy monitoring. And so I applied to do my PhD with that group and got started and, found it was a really, really interesting space. But interestingly, that was actually with the engineering department to begin with. And I realized very soon into the project that we needed the clinician on the team. And so my engineering supervisor put the call out to his friends and said, hey, we're looking for a clinician that can help us with this. And then very interestingly, Fiona had independently been having kind of the same idea for a wearable monitoring technology. And one of her clinical colleagues said, I think you should meet with engineers. They're wanting to do the same thing. And we kind of got linked up that way and then have been working together ever since. So really, it was we both had the idea independently and kind of you know, came together to make it happen.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So it was really in the clinic and noticing that the technology we currently use for fetal monitoring has been the same since the 1960s and 70s. It hasn't really adapted or changed. And our outcomes, you know, regarding stillbirth haven't changed in over 20 years. And perhaps that might be a result of the technology that we have is quite archaic in obstetrics. And it was going to an engineering conference and seeing that Apple Watch that, you know, made us think, well, you know, potentially having an Apple Watch for a pregnancy, you know, adapting and improving that fetal monitoring might lead to improved outcomes. And Emerson's absolutely right that it was a mutual friend that put us in contact, given that we both had this vision and will to improve pregnancy monitoring.
Amazing. How wonderful that you were able to identify this problem that you saw happening in women's healthcare and knowing it needed to be solved, and also seeing that the current healthcare system just wasn't serving women in the way that it should. And so we'd love if you can walk us through what exactly Carly Healthcare does and how your solution is uniquely positioned to solve the problem.
Yeah. So as Kiana mentioned, you know, some of the things we saw in pregnancy monitoring was the inadequacy of the current, what's called a cardiotocography machine, which is something that measures the maternal heart rate, fetal heart rate, and uterine contractions. And so at the moment, nearly all of this monitoring is done in a hospital setting. So women who are at high risk of complications, typically in that last trimester, have to come in regularly for this monitoring to be done both during pregnancy and during labor. And the problem is, because it uses an ultrasound, the clinician has to move it around to find the baby's heart rate. If the baby moves, it drops out. It's frustrating for the clinician. They've got to be, you know, have the woman reclined in a bed or in a lying seat. And so there's a lot of impracticalities, both needing someone to come into hospital as well as that clinician time, that means it's really just not fit for purpose. And so what we've done is instead developed an electrical-based sensing technology. So we have a wearable patch that goes on the mum's tummy. That patch has a few sensors that are spread about to pick up the electrical signals that come both from the baby's heart, the mum's heart, and the uterus. So we can pick up all those same measurements without needing to have a clinician kind of moving that probe around constantly. And so the really exciting thing about this is that it opens up the possibility of doing remote monitoring. So because we don't need someone on hand, we can do these monitoring sessions at home, as well as providing more consistent information that doesn't drop out as the ultrasound probe moves. So we're getting better, more reliable information that's delivered in a way that's more convenient for clinicians and their families. And so really it's a, you know, a win-win on all fronts.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we were really wanted to ask you was about that remote monitoring and getting the kind of real-time insights into which can then feed into better patient experiences and better clinical outcomes. And so what kind of decisions in the clinical workflow are being derived from the insights that the Carly Healthcare wearable tech can provide to clinicians?
The wearable picks up both fetal heart rate, maternal heart rate, and uterine activity. In the first instance, we're really focused on that fetal heart rate that picks up patterns in that heart rate that us clinicians can then read to see whether or not that baby has adequate oxygenation or whether or not that baby might be at risk of fetal asphyxia, so low oxygenation needing urgent delivery. As Emerson mentioned, at the moment, it's a very hospital-centric, clinician-intensive system whereby those patients have to come into hospital, they've got to be lying on a bed. It involves a lot of infrastructure and that one-on-one midwifery care. Whereas with a wearable, this technology could be used potentially anytime, any place. Obviously, it would be with oversight of a clinician. So the Carly technology can only be actioned once a clinician hits that wearable monitoring session. Hopefully, we'll give our patients better access and more convenient access to fetal monitoring.
So with those insights, what are some of the clinical impacts that would then occur?
Yeah, so many of our patients are monitored. So a reason for having pregnancy monitoring is if you've got reduced fetal movements, if you've got a maternal medical condition such as diabetes or high blood pressure, or a fetal condition whereby that baby is small and at risk of not getting enough oxygen and nutrients. So there's many different reasons as to why we might order a fetal monitoring session. And getting that fetal heart rate is the only real-time evaluation we have to know if the baby's coping well with the pregnancy or indeed not coping with the pregnancy. And then, of course, there's labour. And the vast majority of women have fetal heart rate monitoring in labour, again, to determine whether or not the baby's coping with labour or indeed it has low oxygen levels and needs to urgently be born to reduce that risk of a lack of oxygen that might lead to cerebral palsy or stillbirth.
Thanks for sharing that, Fiona. And as someone who has had lived experience of wearing a pregnancy monitor, I can tell that it is a very finicky experience. And I'd love to understand how Kali Healthcare's wearable is different. Is it more comfortable or portable or accessible? Can you share a little bit about how it actually works in practice?
That was a really key feature, is that we wanted to make pregnancy monitoring more accessible and wearable for patients so that they can continue going about their day-to-day and it not impact. So with the monitor, it uses a different technology to the older, to the CTG technology. So the CTG technology uses ultrasound waves. Those ultrasound waves are emitted from the probe and then hit the fetal heart and come back to give us a fetal heart rate reading. Whereas the Kali Healthcare device is picking up that electrical activity of the fetal heart. It picks up the same information, but in a different way, which means that once that sensor patch is placed on the maternal abdomen, it picks up that heart rate the whole time. It doesn't need to be continuously repositioned if the mum or the baby move. We've done usability studies, which has shown that indeed our patients find it very easy to use. We just had to make a few small tweaks to the usability of it, as well as clinicians found that it was also very user-friendly. Some elements of it is it's a single sensor patch, which means that can just be easily placed on the maternal abdomen. The hardware is designed like a makeup compact, and that was really intentional so that it's something that's familiar to women, so that they just open up that makeup compact, put that sensor patch in, and then place that on the maternal abdomen. And here's one Emerson prepared earlier.
I love that. That's so cool that you've been very intentional with the design there. Curious on the other side then, for the clinicians and receiving the data, especially if, you know, a patient is wearing remotely at home, what does that look like for a clinician?
So again, it was really intentional for us to make sure that it would be very usable to a clinician, and it mimics the output of the CTG. So it looks very similar to what a clinician is used to reading. And that, again, was very intentional. We want to make it easy for clinicians to use this device and be able to interpret that fetal heart rate so they can make decisions.
And so does that just integrate into the clinical data that they receive in the in their workplace?
Yeah, correct. So there's a patient app and then there is a clinician portal. Emerson, I'll hand it over to you just to describe the engineering aspects.
Yeah. So the way we've got it operating is that we have this patient app, so the mum can connect her device to the app, and it's very easy for her to then kind of be guided through the process of setting up the device. It then sends all the information back to that clinician portal that Fiona talked about. We're also working with some hospitals to then integrate it back into their electronic medical record system, so the ability to then long-term store all this data in the same place they store all their other clinical information, so making it very easy for the clinicians just to pull up this information just like they would any other system. And you know, have it integrated into their workflows, which has been a big part of it, just making it as easy to integrate this as possible.
Great. That's fantastic. That's really well thought out, I think. And of course, you have to think about all those touch points, right?
Oh, 100%.
Mm. Yeah. It's great to see a team doing that.
So I'd love to know, what are some of the breakthroughs or surprising insights that have come from your work so far?
I think maybe, Fiona, talk about the US clinicians. That was really fun.
Yeah, sure. So probably the most exciting part for us was traveling to the US, and we got to meet with some of the key opinion leaders in the US at Northwell Health, at Mount Sinai, as well as New York Presbyterian. And it was so interesting to get their insights and how they are very keen for novel fetal monitoring technology, not only to pick up the fetal heart, but indeed to pick up that uterine activity. And whether or not, because of the location of the sensor patch, we can pick up strength as well as directionality of signal, whether or not we might be able to help diagnose other pregnancy complications such as preterm birth, and also assist with diagnosing labour as well, which is a real pain point for them when patients are on that labour ward for many, many days and didn't necessarily need to be there. Another aspect was one of the clinicians was very keen to use it as she would see a patient in a clinic, then send them off for their CTG monitoring, then they'd have to come back, show her the trace, and then she'd come up with a care plan. Whereas this type of technology, they could wear it, you know, either just before their appointment in the waiting room or just before they come in, and then she could see them both with, you know, the medical aspects, but also with that diagnostic fetal heart rate information, so that it would just be an all-in-one consult, which she was pretty keen to use it for.
Follow-up question to that. Are you thinking that the clinics themselves or the hospitals would be the owners of the device and then like loan them out to patients, or do patients purchase it themselves?
Yeah, so at the moment the model, Mackenzie, is that the hospital would be the purchaser and they're loaning it out. But we are exploring the other models in the longer term, but initially that's the focus.
Yeah, really fascinating. So many insights that could be generated.
Yeah, that's right. And this way it then means that the clinicians can become familiar with the technology as well. I think just going straight to the consumer, it, you know, might put the clinicians a bit off guard initially. So I think it is a good model whereby they can become really familiar with the technology in the first instance. Mm-hmm.
And really own that process of then managing the patient care from the data insights and, of course, like all the risks that come with that as well. So that makes a lot of sense.
We'd love to explore your journeys as founders as well. What's it been like for each of you to step into the founder role and to spin this technology out of an academic setting?
Yeah, I think the way I would describe it is an opportunity for immense personal and professional growth. I think, you know, you have to do so many things and you're constantly like pushing yourself, like what you can do, how fast you can do it, how much you're capable of. So I think like it really shows you how much you can do. And like, I think there's things, you know, I've done in this process that were like, could never have conceived several years ago. And I think one of the great things that Fiona and I often say is like when one of us is going through a really like hard period, the other one's usually doing well and they kind of like help me. So like, you know, if I'm struggling, Fiona will help me, vice versa. So it's good that we have a bit of a yin yang when we're going through these really challenging times.
Yeah, 100%. As Emerson said, it is the ultimate roller coaster. You know, the highs are really high, but the lows are also really low. And, you know, I've done things and seen things that I never could have anticipated. You know, well, one, working with engineers, working with Emerson, you know, it's been just such a cool journey having that multidisciplinary approach.
Absolutely. I think if everyone knew what they were getting themselves into at the beginning, they, no one would actually do it, right? So you kind of have to go in with a bit of like blind faith and naivety. One of the questions that we always love to ask people is about your favorite failure. So something that didn't go to plan or something that has taught you an invaluable lesson that maybe wasn't, like you said, maybe it was one of the lows, but you've been able to take something from it. Do you have a good story for us?
Yeah, I don't have one that just comes to mind. I suppose it's not really a failure, but it's like a really happy accident was that when we designed the device, we made sure that it didn't go over the umbilicus and we made sure it's to one side of the abdomen. And it turns out that orientation is like the recommended way to sleep during pregnancy. If I got the right fit, it's like in the right way. So that if you sleep on the other side, it's a recommended.
I remember when I was told like I could only sleep on my left, and there are even, you know, special pillows and things like that to keep you sleeping on your left.
Yeah, we didn't realize because it's on the right side. So it means you can realize there's nothing on the left side of the abdomen. So you can like, if you were to sleep, you could comfortably sleep on that side.
Awesome.
And not intentional, not a intentional design decision.
That's crazy. There are so many parts of like pregnancy that just you don't think about that impact. So I find it's really a really interesting intersection when we're starting to talk about bringing tech and more data insights into improving the way we monitor and track pregnancy and fetal movements and everything in between. It's a fascinating space. There's definitely, it's, you know, so many opportunities for innovation in there.
I think some of the biggest things we abide by as a team is firstly like kindness first. You know, I think given the space we're working in and you know, with women's health and the vulnerability of some of our participants in our studies and the people we work with. We've got to make sure that we, you know, embody that. We're always having kindness first, both to everyone we work with, as well as each other and the team, and always making sure that we support each other. So I think that's one thing that we really stand by. And another thing is both Fiona and I being from that research background is really having a really strong evidence base, making sure that everything we do is backed by evidence, that we've made sure that we've trialed it with clinicians, users, and made sure that it's as robust as it can be. So I think we try and, you know, embody that in everything we do as a team.
Yeah. Even the way you've talked about the way you've designed the product, and we can already see some of those insights coming through in the design and the integration and your plans. That's really cool to see. So you've secured over $1 million in funding and won a $2.65 million CRCP grant last year. Congratulations. With all the medical startups, those are the two big things that they're looking to secure. So how was your experience raising capital and also securing the grant? And then did anything about that process surprise you or shock you? Curious to hear what you have to say.
I think the biggest thing is it always takes longer than you think. Even when you try and factor in how long you think it's going to take, it always takes longer. So, I think just having a lot of time dedicated to making sure you've got all your materials correct, that you've road tested it, you've spoken to people. I think for us, you know, realizing these relationships do take a lot of time to build. You know, I think it's people that we've met years prior who eventually come into a round that we're, you know, raising at the current time. And so I think that's my biggest learning, is just it takes time and you need to get to know people and build those relationships to make sure it's really successful.
Yeah. And I think the other thing regarding funding, it's all about resilience, right? Like, we have had so many discussions with many, many, potential investors. And it is just going back, giving them updates on what's happening. And it was really those investors that we spoke to, you know, very early on that then later could be secured for that seed round. Yeah. And as Emerson mentioned, it's, you know, having those relationships for many, many months. I think everybody that then invested, we had been in discussions with for over 6 months.
Wow. Amazing. And what advice would you have for other healthcare founders going out to raise?
I think there's lots that can be covered. I think the main thing, if you were to focus on just a couple of things, is have the user needs and business case behind them really clear, like understand who it is you're selling to and exactly why they will buy your product. And then secondary to that is, if, you know, if that's your clinical claim and what you're going out to sell, understand the regulatory and technical pathway to get there. You know, you really need to map out then everything you need to do and have it really clear how you're going to get to those first customers.
Yeah, that's such a complicated space within medtech. And I feel like if you don't have those two things, then you're definitely probably setting yourself off with a bad start, I guess. But I'm sure, you know, founders will have to learn the hard way, right, if they don't have that ready to go.
I think another aspect around funding is it's given us a lot of insights and really pushed us to get to where we are today. In fact, you know, it was initially the funders saying, well, how many clinicians have you spoken to? What are their thoughts about it? That we then reached out to clinicians, you know, embarked on those consumer surveys that then helped us build things. So, you know, starting those conversations quite early can also kind of help build that business case up to a level whereby you are investable.
Yeah. And so was the process then you sort of had a conversation with an investor, they sort of said, where's this? And then you were like, oh, okay, we need to go back and do that. And then going back again and saying, okay, now we've done that, what else do you want to know?
Right. And that continues to happen to this day. You think if only there was, you know, 48 hours in one day. If only we could do everything we need to do, that would be great. Yeah, it's just kind of working out your priorities and then what will allow you to achieve that next level of funding. So prioritizing, you know, those tasks.
Yeah, I can imagine the challenge and the time that would take, but a worthwhile pursuit.
On to the next topic now, post-funding, and sort of, I guess, thinking about what are some of the unspoken things? Because I love that we've had this beautiful conversation around improving the experience specifically around, monitoring. And I think if we zoom out or take a step back, yeah, perhaps in obstetrics or around pregnancy, is there anything else that you feel, you know, maybe our audience should know about or should hear about that you feel is a little bit unspoken or not discussed enough? Or maybe it is in your field, right? Because you hear about it so much, but for the lay person.
Yeah, I think there's really a huge focus now, both in the research setting and also commercial around that, in consumer engagement and engaging consumers, you know, both patients as well as clinicians quite early. Like, rather than sheltering the research away in the ivory tower,
you know, we're now really encouraged to engage with people with that lived experience and get their insights. And that's certainly what we have done. I still remember showing some midwives some different designs. Can you remember that, Emerson? Like on different like compacts and what they'd look like as to what's going to be the easiest and most user-friendly design.
Yeah, I think it's probably a you know, general across the field is like, I suppose, just how many people need to be engaged and in support to get a new technology into practice. Like there are just so many stakeholders that are involved. So I think often it's really challenging, you know, with, you know, clinicians and patients have a need for something. They go, it'd be really great if we could do this, but to actually get that product into the facility and in their hands, there's a lot of things you need to go through. And I think it's just making sure all those stakeholders are aligned. Like, you know, the IT team is happy to integrate it to their hospital, that the business team makes the business team, sort of business case makes sense, that it's meeting all those user needs, that when they take it home, it easily works with their smartphone, that the internet connection is reliable, that they can get the data. You know, it's just all these little pieces that come to play. So I think just doing lots of mapping, like talking to everyone to understand all those challenges at the very early outset can help you build the right technology that's actually going to go the distance and make that impact. So I think, just understanding the scale of the problem is really important.
Yeah, I love that emphasis on integrating it, focusing on the different stakeholders and building something that is going to meet everyone's needs. Because at the end of the day, I mean, you can't just build something for, you know, the clinicians. You can't just build something for the patient. It actually has to, integrate. And so I guess one more question on this sort of real talk section is really thinking, so why is this work beyond the great healthcare outcomes that will eventuate from the use of this product really good for healthcare systems as a whole?
Yeah, I think it kind of touches on my previous point is like demonstrating that we can make a product that can be used in that home setting that can transfer this information and ideally start to provide some of these insights into things like prediction of labor, prediction of preterm birth and these things, you know, having that digital workflow totally enabled kind of sets up a platform for how it could be done in future. So, you know, at the moment, while we're focused on the fetal heart rate, maternal heart rate, urinary activity, this platform could collect other pieces of information that could be used in that same workflow. So kind of getting into the healthcare system, getting clinicians used to these kind of technology opens the door a little bit wider for the next technology that comes along. So we hope we can, you know, be the front runners in this process and, you know, make it easier for the next technology that comes to play.
I'll ask the last question for the wrap up. So if you could rewrite the script on women's health, what would be one thing that you would change?
I think it probably comes back to that point I had before is like involve women in the process of the design of technology. I think so many of the technologies that are used just did not consider women's needs. And they were just from a clinician 50 years ago thought, you know, this makes it easy for my workflow. And we've just seen the, you know, the terrible repercussions have come from not involving women and the end user in the product design.
Amazing. I think that might be a wrap.
Oh, thank you both. I really appreciate the time taken and, you know, it's great to talk about the product.
Yeah. No, I think we got all our questions and it's such an interesting product, such an interesting area. So I'm keen to see what happens next and where you go.
Thanks for listening to The New Script. If you enjoyed the episode, make sure to follow or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review if you're feeling generous.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, or guest suggestions. Drop us a line at hello@thenewscriptpodcast.com.
This podcast was proudly produced by Day One, the podcast network for founders, operators, and investors. Learn more at dayone.fm. Until then, keep rewriting the script.